It's showtime.
Cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. On both streams, says Brother Deacon Asa, the Morans is afoot. Yes, they are, they are. Oh, they so are. And so here we are beginning another broadcast week, the second week, the second broadcast week of March. It is the ninth day of March, 2020. Yes, it is Moran Monday. And don't we just have them? We do, we do. But before we jump off into that wonderful and wacky and zany world, every program at the Horn begins with gratitude. And so too this one. Thanks going out to our subscribers for the weekend. Thanks going out to Khalil and to Ralphs, to Sue for Earth. Thanks to Nancy. Thank you to Marsha. Thank you, Dwayne. Thank you, Brendan. Thank you very kindly to Brock. Thanks to Reed. Thanks to James. And thanks to Dr. Allen. Thank you, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program via PayPal. Thank you again to all those of you who keep this going with your subscriptions via PayPal, Patreon, and, of course, a la carte during the course of the program. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and, goodness me, what a day. What a weekend. And we will get to it all. But, you know, just by way of getting things started, there's a scene in Henry V. In the tents of the French, they've got the English outnumbered, you know, in Shakespeare's telling. They've got the massively outnumbered. They've got tremendous cavalry. All the numerical advantages are there, and the Dauphin, the Crown Prince, stalks his tent in the war council and asks, "Oh, will morning never come?" Because he's so eager to get about the business of slaughtering the English. Of course, less than 24 hours later, the French are collecting their dead from a massive slaughter. And in a way, I think that's an appropriate analogy, metaphor, for the market. Every morning since about March 10th, 2009, the movers and shakers, the titans, the captains of industry, the masters of the universe,
have waited for the opening bell, saying, "Oh, will morning never come?" As they reached out and they anticipated and they grasped sweet, sweet profits, sweet, sweet ingatherings from the wealth of the world. And now it's 11 years later, and today, as the day crept on, those same titans, those same masters of the universe, those same giants of industry and collectors of wealth watched each petty second tick by on the clock, wondering, "God, will this day never end?" Because it was a bad one. Let's see. The final numbers. The Dow hemorrhaged more than 2,000 points. The S&P lay bleeding on the floor. And stocks, moreover, fell over 7%. And in fact, we had one of these last week, too. It was the worst day the market had since the last time a Republican was president. You know, if only the for-profit media would couch things in terms like that, we might have a better understanding of why these things happen. But they don't. They don't. No, they just don't. And so we will hear blatherings and babblings about anything except the fact that if you leave a Republican in charge of the economy long enough, they will eventually destroy it root and branch because they are pillagers. They're raiders. It's what they do. And if it should happen, now maybe this was just aggregated over a weekend's worth of nausea and paranoia, and that's why it did what it did today on Monday. But if it should happen that this happens again tomorrow, because I went and checked, if those nervous Nellies in the market manage to shit another 7 percentage points off the market's value, we will actually be underneath where the Dow Jones Industrial Average stood on January the 19th, 2017. In other words, even a day, half as bad as this one, will erase every single gain made since coronavirus Caligula ascended to the presidency. Every penny, and possibly more. Oh, yes, the movers and shakers are talking about how, you know, it's the Saudis' fault and it's the coronavirus's fault. But the fact of the matter is, there's an element of truth to both. But moreover, it's also gravity. Plain old gravity. One of the weakest forces in the universe. but as what Isaac Newton posited proved to be true, what goes up must come down. It's coming down. And a lot of it probably does have to do with the coronavirus. Some of it probably does have to do with what the Saudi price war with Russia. And maybe some of that has something to do with climate change. Don't know. But I had this mental image of traitors covered in a dripping sheen of flop sweat, watching the numbers all day long, watching wealth drain away. Although anytime somebody loses in the market, somebody else wins. It's rigged that way. But how good would it be if we could get the millionaires in the for-profit media, the multimillionaires, to say things like I just said? The market suffered its worst day since the last time a Republican was president. And the worst part of it is we got no real means of fixing it. Because virus for brains there in the White House has been pissing and moaning for the last year.
I want interest rates cut.
And never saying, of course,
it'd be great for me if that happened.
But, well, reality is what reality is.
You've got a collapse of confidence in the currency. People are going to panic.
Yeah.
There's going to be gold riots, atonal music, right. Political chaos, right. Mass suicide, right?
Yeah.
It's Germany before Hitler. Uh-huh. You can see that.
Yeah.
Jesus. I don't know what people are going to do when a six-pack of Budweiser costs $1,200.
Well, that'll be off.
Would be. And you can always drink Corona. Sorry, I just can't resist. So we'll probably be talking about some of that later in the program. Before I get too far in, though, I have to share some happy news. And that is, namely, that Tracy, who you heard experiencing a little bit of nervousness on Friday evening, Friday on the front porch, Tracy went out and kicked that triathlon's ass. Yes, she did. She finished. She did the whole damn thing. Tracy is, by God, a triathlete. And now she's thinking about doing another one. You know, apparently, Lay's potato chips and triathlons share that in common. You can never do just one. So congratulations, Tracy. Congratulations from all of us here in the Horn Family Community Congregation. Now, a couple of pieces of correspondence before we jump into the general mayhem and moranity. This comes from Ron. And, oh, did I? So the fundraising goal is $240 this evening. 10 to 24, 24 at 10, all that ciphering. But we knocked out almost all of last week, all but $40. And so thank you very kindly. And so sincerely, I went to the settlements and loaded up on provisions over the weekend. lots of water, rice, beans, some hog jowl, things like that. Mayonnaise. Yeah. Gotta have mayonnaise. Gotta have the right provisions for the new frontier. And so far, it's all pretty quiet around here, but I mentioned the coronavirus a couple of times. to the checkout lady at Walmart. I said, I sure hope you're keeping the hand sanitizer. And she said, oh, I think they're just exaggerating it. It ain't that big a deal. I said, ma'am, it is a big deal. It's very, very real. And you're on the front lines. And she looked as if she was cogitating on it for a minute, and she said, yeah, well, maybe, but I tell you what, I just don't know why they had to let them all come in this country. Who? Them. They. Now, see, this is what, I mean, I don't know that she goes home and watches Fox News. Maybe she gets her news on Facebook from her little right-wing groups or whatever. But that weren't no Democrat and that weren't no liberal checking me out. They, them. So she didn't know, understand why we had to let American citizens back into the United States. Yeah, I know. But that seems to be pretty much the prevailing attitude around here. And of course, this is such a damn poor state. Yeah. We've maybe tested a few people, but not nearly enough. And with every passing day, I get a little closer to significantly limiting my travel, trying to make sure we've got enough stuff laid in that I don't have to do much, a whole lot more. Because, of course, there won't be any treatment. There is no treatment. The most you can do is put somebody with who has it in a bad way, you give them oxygen. Beyond that, not so much. But I'll just be carrying on some conversation when I do go out, and then, you know, showering in bleach when I get home. And I'll report back on, you know, what it's like here in the coal mine with all the damn canaries. But like I said, I got a couple of emails to share. This one comes from Ron in Raleigh. The hagiography is in full effect, Ron says. I've been listening to a lot of progressive programming, and a lot of hosts profess their love for Grandpa Joe. Well, I'm not particularly a fan. But I am a fan of removing Donald Trump from office. Ron says, although if Joe gets the nomination, unlike you, I will not joyfully go to the polls and vote for him. I will vote for him because he is by far the lesser of two evils. Well, as John Lennon once said, whatever gets you through the night. But I still maintain it will be the single most patriotic thing. Whoever I vote for in November will be the single most patriotic thing I have ever done in my Gen X life, my slacker Gen X life. Ron continues and says, it seems that white people are able to forget or not acknowledge that Joe came to Congress on an anti-busing platform and promptly cozied up to two of the most virulent racists to serve since Reconstruction. We discussed this at length, Herman Talmadge and John Eastland. He's been trying to spin this as his effort to reach across the aisle to reach an accommodation, whereas his real purpose was to stop efforts to further busing. That does seem to be clear. Joe has never been a fan of the working man. The bankruptcy bill has caused a lot of pain for a lot of people. The fact that he left Anita Hill in the cold by not calling witnesses during the Clarence Thomas confirmation hearings. If George Bush is a war criminal for his actions in Iraq, doesn't Joe have blood on his hands as well? A lot of people do. A lot more people got that wrong than right, at least in the Congress. Branko Marcetic has a new book titled Yesterday's Man, The Case Against Joe Biden. He goes in depth on just how right-wing Joe really is. Claims are being made that there was no coercion used to get all the other candidates to drop out on the same day and endorse Joe. This is the establishment that Bernie talks about. All these folks fell into line when told to, even the folks that claim to be progressive endorsed Joe. Well, I still don't buy that. I think that Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg particularly were stalking horses for Joe. They were in the race in case Joe faltered, in case Joe stumbled, in case his candidacy collapsed like all his other candidacies had collapsed before him. And they were there to carry the banner. Because that was a real possibility. But once he posted the numbers that he posted in South Carolina, it was no longer necessary. And it was natural for them to get out at that time. I got to tell you, I'm getting about as burned out on the word establishment as I got burned out in 2016 with hearing the word neoliberal used to describe everybody who ever brought Jill Stein a cold cup of coffee. When we jargonize language, we cheapen it, and I'm not saying that's what Ron's doing. But when we jargonize language, we cheapen it, and we water down its value. And you know, I'm just barely old enough that I can remember hippies. You know, the original ones. And and that's where that word comes from. The establishment. Back when the establishment was a term that was being used with legitimacy, it was being used to describe the murderous thugs in the Nixon administration and people who generally supported the Vietnam War, if I recall correctly. And it calls to mind visions of dudes with long stringy hair and like strings of kidney beans strung on thread around their and white guys in dashikis and dude. Well, no, not so much dude. That comes later. But I now every time, and again, I don't have a candidate. I'm simply voting for whomever is the nominee in November. Again, because I remind you, my primary vote doesn't count because it doesn't happen until May. And so I'm going to vote for whoever the nominee is, plain and simple. But every time I hear Bernie use the word establishment, I feel like he should be, you know, dressed as a hippie or something. Because it doesn't resonate with me. You can't be any further from the establishment, whatever that word means anymore, than I am. I'm a possessor of white male privilege, but among possessors of white male privilege, by virtue of where I am and who I am in Central Appalachia, it is about as weak as that privilege can get and still be white male privilege. And I think my position on Pete and Amy, I didn't support either one of them. But I don't think it's some grand and nefarious scheme. We fall too easily into that trap. Politics is a strategic game, and they were playing it strategically. It worked out well for Amy Klobuchar because, except for the part about her throwing things at her staff and screaming at them and treating them generally like pieces of shit, It raised her profile, her name recognition, on a national basis as opposed to just people from Minnesota knowing who she was. And Jesus Christ, it was awesome for Pete Buttigieg. I mean, you're the mayor of the fourth largest town in Indiana, and all of a sudden everybody in the United States knows your name? His check is written. And here in the next few years, we're going to see him cash it. Ron in Raleigh continues and says, if Joe wins, nothing good will happen. He will not be pushed from the left because, as you say, ha, what left? No, I think Ron's probably right there. But he can, I suspect, there is a far greater likelihood of him being encouraged to do things that are right than there are of nitwit Nero. Because, see, no matter how badly some may want it, November is not going to be Bernie versus Joe. That's what's going on right now. November is going to be nitwit Nero versus Joe or Bernie. And so I'll come back to, and Kenda in Missouri and I were chatting a little bit about this over the weekend. I'll come back to what I said on Friday. If you want that first woman president, then raise 73 shades of blue, screaming, frozen hell, making sure that Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders know that they simply must select a woman as their running mate. Because the chances of either one of those dropping dead in their first term in office, should they win, are at least even. And once again, I'm way out in front of the curve. Because lo and behold, for the first time this morning, on my filthy morning habit, son of a gun, they talked about something we've been talking about for months. Because we're just that much better. And that is that Trump, Bernie, and Biden, all three, are walking around with a viral bullseye on their backs because of their great age. The mortality rate for the coronavirus among people in that demographic is staggering. And it's probably causing Nitwit Nero to stain his trousers. You saw that photo, right, from Tennessee where he wet his pants? Jesus. But we'll get to that in a little bit. But it just seems like, from a goddess of irony standpoint, the chances of a female running mate becoming president of the United States are greatly enhanced this time around, because we're playing with generational dynamite. And there will be and we will be electing a president who was the likes of which was beyond the comprehension of the people who put the structure of this government together. Anyway, Ron concludes saying, Grandpa Joe does not have the wherewithal to run a long campaign nor ramrod legislation through Congress, because when you get down to brass tacks, Joe agrees with Trump on more things than he disagrees with him on. I don't know that I can co-sign that. I don't think Biden is down with separating babies from their families. I don't think he's down with keeping them in cages. Yes, he's patted and touched a few, but he hasn't been credibly accused of full-on sexual assault by almost if not two dozen women. I don't recall when he was Obama's vice president and Barack Obama created the Bears Ears National Monument. I don't recall him declaring that we should open it up to be blasted and fracked and mined and gouged until there's not a damn thing left of the precious cultural heritage that that is to we the people, and particularly to the indigenous people who have lived there for the last 10 or 12,000 years. I don't recall Joe Biden doing that. Do I want someone more liberal, more progressive? Yes. But over the course of observing this country and doing this program for almost 20 years, you might see polling data that say that Americans like some of the same things that progressive people like. But damn, it sure doesn't seem like they like us much. I wish it was otherwise. So I'm still where I was and staying where I am. I'm going to vote for the Democratic nominee in November. I will not be swayed from that. I will not be talked into voting for whomever it is the Green Weenies nominate, and I goddamn sure won't vote for Trump, and I won't leave it blank. And, Ron brings up Herman Talmadge and Clarence Eastman. They were both vicious, wicked, evil, hateful, racist pieces of shit. So that leaves me in a conundrum. Who do I trust? If I want to turn to my as a possessor of white male privilege, if I want to turn for guidance to the African American community, who make up the core and the beating heart of the Democratic Party, who do I trust? To whom do I assign a greater degree of credibility? Jim Clyburn of South Carolina or Bree Bree Gray? John Lewis or Jesse Jackson? To name but a few. And I don't know the answer to that, because there's no there's no monolithic black community any more than there's a monolithic hillbilly community or a monolithic any other community. So all I can do is analyze and consider. Michael Harriott over at The Root says, contrary to what white people believe, there is no nationwide Negro Weekly conference call. I can't understand why it seems unfathomable that black voters, for varied and separate reasons, came to the same conclusions. White voters do it all the time. That's how we got Trump. I take his point most seriously. Let's see. There are more notes to go through, and then we'll start into the news. But thank you very kindly to Barbara. Thanks a ton, Barbara, for jumping in. That gets us down to $215 to finish the evening and stay on top of fundraising for this month. Thank you, Barbara. Thank you. In a nationwide poll, a Quinnipiac national poll on a prospective Trump versus Biden matchup, these are the numbers. White men, Trump 58%, Biden 34%. I'm a member of the 34%. Then there's everyone else, which I guess would mean white women, African-American men, African-American women, Hispanic men, Hispanic women, Asian men, Asian women. What am I missing? Everyone else, Biden 60%, Trump 32%. Like I said, I'm a member of the 34%. Thanks for sending that along, David, in South Carolina, Stan. I had seen that earlier, but I didn't have it immediately to hand. Lots of way to goes coming in for Tracy. Thanks, y'all. Darlene in Connecticut says, with a 2,000-point-plus drop in the stock market today, shouldn't Trump do what he has demanded of other presidents and immediately resign? No. Remember, Darlene, he didn't say that the president should resign. He said that a president who loses 1,000 points in the market on a single day should be impeached. That's what he said. But he's an idiot, so I don't know exactly what a president should be impeached for losing. I mean, I'm just being fair, for having a 2,000-point hemorrhage in the market. Megan with a note. Clerk Clara, talking about the lady I spoke to at Wally World. Clerk Clara said, Megan says, damn, Bob. I bet she thinks President Obama is a foreigner because she's one of those who thinks Hawaii is a foreign country. Well, so's Kenya. And remember, the now chief of staff in the White House is a guy who became unelectable in North Carolina, a maggot, who on the campaign trail declared that we're going, and this was what, back in 2012, we're going to send that Obama back to Kenya or wherever it is he's from. Yeah. Steve in New York, who sends along greetings from sunny 70-degree North New York City. Well, we almost got there. Hey, it's all of 74 degrees here in the Fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion. No propane going. Gets a little bit warmer, and it'll be naked radio again. Steve adds, along Ron's lines, rather than establishment, perhaps center-right wing of the party or status quo wing of the party, I do think this Obama-orchestrated Klobuchar and Buttigieg dropping out and O'Rourke's endorsement. Obama's not a fan of Bernie or Warren. Remember, he wouldn't appoint Warren to head the CFPB, instead nominating Ohio AG Richard Cordray. I don't begrudge Obama supporting someone. I think being surreptitious about it was frankly disgusting. But we don't know if it was surreptitious until we... It's a theory, not a proven fact. I think it makes every bit as much sense that they got out when they got out because the point of their candidacies had ceased to exist. They were only there in case he fell apart. And then we got a little professional wrestling along the way as Pete and Amy sniped at each other to show that they had fighting spirit. Scott in San Diego says, subject line establishment. I simply use the term to describe something that's readily apparent or should be. From the Cambridge Dictionary, noun, the people who have most of the power within government or society or in a particular business or activity. Yeah, that's the definition. I get that. The problem is that the word has been reduced to whoever brings you a cold cup of coffee, or whoever brings you a cold hamburger. And that's when all the meaning gets sucked out of it. Remember all the fun we had with neoliberal establishment shill sycophant? Remember that? Hey, thank you to Steve and Ms. Karen and little Cletus and little Twiggy. Thank you very kindly, you guys. We are now down to only 205. Flavio asking, saying, Clyburn has taken more than $1 million in pharma money in a decade, far surpassing peers. This doesn't matter. I didn't say it doesn't matter. I posed the question, who do I trust? And in that particular comparison, I used Jim Clyburn, who has a tremendous amount of power within the Democratic caucus in the House, versus the National Press Secretary for Bernie, who proudly voted for Jill Stein in 2016. It's by way of setting up a "for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God" kind of situation. Which did more harm, $1 million to Jim Clyburn's campaign, or voting for Jill Stein in 2016? I don't know. Let's ask some babies in cages in a concentration camp down on the border, why don't we? That's okay. That makes sense. Steve in New York says, the word establishment is to the Democratic left as liberal is to all Republicans. Mm-hmm. I also want to share this with you. This came from Paul. From parts unknown. And I think it has value, and I think it is helpful as a way of looking at things and maintaining something vaguely resembling perspective, because I think vague resemblances are probably the most we've got going for us right now. Subject line, weighing in. Paul from Parts Unknown writes, I thought I'd weigh in on the whole coronavirus issue to the Horn family. By the way, the entire Italian peninsula, the entire country of Italy is now locked down. It's shut down. The whole peninsula is under quarantine. Movement is limited. Travel is limited. And this from something that Republicans refer to as a hoax. Well, maybe not anymore, but more on that later. Paul from Parts Unknown weighs in and says, I thought I would weigh in on the whole coronavirus issue to the Horn family. I write this email with great care and thought. I want to try and give an accurate picture of what I think the situation is without accidentally fear-mongering or increasing paranoia to something out of proportion. First, let me start with my qualifications. Some of the Horn family just know me as the maker of the Palmans every holiday season, and they are wonderful. But my day job is being a scientist. I have a Bachelor's of Science in Chemistry with a specialization in biochemistry. That specialization included classes in virology, immunology, immunochemistry, and immunology laboratory. My master's is in chemistry with focuses in advanced organic synthesis and chemical biology. This means I have detailed knowledge about how drugs interact with the body on a chemical, cellular, and medical level. When I was looking to apply to graduate school to get into a master's or doctoral program, some of the options I considered were going into a public health or an epidemiology program, epidemiology being the study of disease and how it is transmitted. I am by no means an expert in outbreaks, epidemiology, viruses, or COVID-19 specifically, but I feel I have a moderate level of understanding on this topic, and far more than the average person. So here is my educated opinion on the situation. First of all, you must understand that scientists are uncomfortable making predictions or statements that are not backed up by data. That's what I will add editorially. That is what makes them scientists and not priests. No matter what an expert says at this point in the outbreak, they cannot speak with certainty because we do not have accurate data, and or we cannot trust the data we have from other countries, including this one. Nothing makes a scientist more nervous than speaking on a topic or answering a question when they are less than 50% certain of the facts or data. This is a possible reason why most of the experts seem nervous, because of the massive uncertainty we know about the outbreak so far. In the end, we don't know how bad this could get. If we're lucky, only a few thousand American people will die. At worst, millions will. And so, a helpful analogy. Let me see if I can add to it a little bit. With a clip. The audio alone should be helpful. So, on the long-running game show, Paul from Parts Unknown notes, the best analogy I can think of is to picture a Plinko board from the Price is Right game show. Yeah, And what I wanted to see here is if we could get, yeah, there it is, Plinko.
Here's a Plinko chip worth up to $10,000.
Kennedy's in existence.
Yeah, there's one of them right there.
Oh my God!
We have four more of them. We have four more Plinko chips, as you know, but you have to know prices to get them. Let's see the first one. Go ahead, George.
All right. First, you can prepare whole meals in advance and save your leftovers using.
Okay, so now we got to go through the price guessing stuff. Obviously, the contestant is very excited. And he's trying to get as many Plinko chips as he can. And then it comes time to play Plinko.
Good luck, man. Five chips.
Here we go, guys.
They want some money. Here comes chip number one. 10,000 in the middle. 10,000 in the middle. Same spot.
Okay, so you get the idea. I think it's kind of modeled on the old, the Japanese kissing cousin to pinball called pachinko. And the disc, well, we'll go back to Paul from Parts Unknown for the description. A contestant puts an air hockey puck-like object in a slot at the top of a board full of pegs or nails that bounces down to end up in one of the multiple slots at the bottom. On the game show, different slots equal different cash prizes. But in this analogy, the slots on the bottom represent possible outcomes of this outbreak, while the slots at the top represent how well and what level of resources you're committing as a government to fight the outbreak. So if we imagine the bottom slots on the most left being the best outcomes of the outbreak and the slots on the right being the worst outcomes, where we have death tolls in the hundreds of thousands or millions, now imagine the leftmost top slots being the best and most prepared responses to this outbreak and the slots on the right being the most inept, late, half-ass responses. Paul from Parts Unknown is doing a fantastic job of creating this mental picture. Now, if we put our puck in the most left slot on top, it will tend to stay on the left side when it hits the bottom. However, it is possible for the puck to travel across the entire Plinko board to the worst possible scenario on the right side of the board, and vice versa. At this point, we can definitely say the puck was inserted more on the incompetent and inept side of the board. Also, the puck is about halfway down the board, pulling a little bit to the right side, letting us know that most of the bottom slots on the left side that have the best outcomes of the board are unreachable at this point. So while there are quite a few pegs left for the puck to hit, we're waiting for it to fall between outcomes that range from American deaths in the hundreds to the millions. There are many pegs that the puck will still pass through that will determine the outcome. Will people in general follow the hygienic practices that the CDC is recommending? Can we get enough test kits? The weather over the next 2 months, the general health of a population, government response, and I'm sure many others. In the end, this is where we stand. We all wait and watch to see where the puck will finally stop. No matter what happens, it is important to remember that no matter the outcome, we started with that puck far on the right side of the Plinko board. And at this point, any hopeful outcomes we have at the end are mostly due to blind luck. I don't want to alarm people or make them depressed, Paul from Parts Unknown says. I just want them to understand that we have no individual power at this point. The outbreak has to play out. Wash your hands, take precautions, and otherwise hope for the best. This should be easy for the Horn family, because that's what we all have been doing since Trump got elected. Stay strong, Horn family. We will survive this. I cannot express how much, I cannot adequately express how much I appreciate the time and effort that Paul from Parts Unknown put into this. It's a great analogy, and it speaks to the fact that when you, at the front end, when you foreclose good outcomes at the beginning, you make good outcomes at the end less likely. And so, for instance, when Corona Caligula ditched massive amounts of staff at the CDC, that's a couple of slots over on the left in Paul from Parts Unknown's analogy, that we don't get to use. A few more slots get foreclosed when he spreads the idea that it's a hoax. Okay. The fact that he disbanded the pandemic task force closes a couple more slots. You know, because Obama came up with that, so it had to go. And so, we find ourselves because we did not his regime screwed up the first round of test kits. They screwed up a second round of test kits. They've hesitated about getting them out because they're scared to death of having the actual numbers of infections become public. And so we wind up with only a tiny handful of slots into which we can drop our puck. Now, on a global basis, last when we checked in Friday evening, the count was at 101,000 worldwide confirmed infections. And I don't know what the margin of error is on that, but it must be tremendous because starting all the way back with when the damn thing got loose in China, they undercounted then, and we've been undercounting since. And even still, between Friday night at the close of the program and this evening at the beginning, we went from 101,000 to 113,584. By tomorrow, the death toll will cross 4,000, if it hasn't already. The total recovered is slightly more than half of the total confirmed. And so I think Paul from Parts Unknown's general explanation of it gives us a pretty good idea of where this is going to go. And frankly, it's a better explanation than anything that has come out of the Trump regime. And that's frightening. Schools have been closed in Madrid. There are jumps in cases in Germany and France. Far Canada has 34 confirmed cases and 4 recoveries and no deaths. No deaths and no recoveries in Iceland. Cases are growing in Argentina, Brazil, Peru, Ecuador, Chile. Curiously, Bolivia and Venezuela still show no cases, maybe because no testing. Because that's the other side of this coin. You cannot find what you are not looking for. Going back to Ron and Raleigh for a minute. Ron says, when I said Trump and Grandpa Joe agreed, I was speaking about financial matters, banks, credit cards, and that sort of thing. I think Joe would not put kids in cages. The establishment, in my mind, are the third-way Democrats without unions. The Democratic Party has plighted its troth with Wall Street. And a note from Lady B, directed to Ron and Raleigh. Much respect, my brother. You're older than me and have seen and done far more in your life than I can imagine. I'm a black woman, but I know how the brothers have struggled. I know this. So that's why, as a black woman, I want to tell you to take it easy on Bob and our white listener friends. Aw. I don't like Biden either. He's definitely part of the establishment. But keep in mind, he also happened to stand with Obama as vice president. Maybe it was so he could keep his eye on things. I don't know. But he was alongside him. We have to give him credit for that. We can't always get what we want, so we do with what we have. We've always done that, whether it was eating the feet and guts of pigs or making do with the less desirable vegetables from the garden. We are survivors. We have and always will deal with adversity better. Please reconsider your position. Vote for Joe if he's the nominee. Well, Ron didn't say he wasn't going to. He said he would vote for him, but he would be voting for him as the lesser of two evils, Lady B. I don't want that to be misconstrued. This ain't about purity, says Lady B. It's about stemming the white nationalist wound for just a bit longer. More Xers and millennials will now be motivated to vote in the future, especially for folks who give a shit about us. I got 19 years until I retire. You better believe I give a damn. And as a member of the largest Democratic voting bloc in the country, and as the half of the black community who actually holds shit together in black families, straighten up and fly right. Don't fuck this up for the youth. Get Trump out first and persecute Joe later. Save that hotep bullshit for after we put out this fire. Otherwise, you really will be letting the man burn it all down for you. I think Ron and Raleigh is not hell. He's not even in the same time zone as Hotep. So, yeah. But I think Lady B, you were writing somewhat tongue in cheek there. So, yeah. Updating: Steve in New York lets me know that Canada had its first coronavirus death today. Scott in San Diego, adding to Paul from Parts Unknown's coronavirus Plinko analogy, an excellent way to describe things. Unfortunately, unlike The Price is Right, the Trump administration's handling of this thing will be wholly different than the typical Mark Goodson, Bill Todman-produced game shows of the 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. That team were masters of creating and presenting dozens of interesting, fun, and engaging programs. Trump, on the other hand, wants us all to lose. Not to mix my game show metaphors here, but the predictable Trump outcome will be, as Let's Make a Deal viewers recognize, a zonk, a.k.a. a worthless booby prize. Oh, what was that other one? Some sort of a spin game. I can't remember, but yeah, the same, similar, yeah. All right. So that gets us, wow, where did that hour go? To the top of the hour. And now we can, I think, perhaps well and truly get into the, moranity of it all.
You've got to remember that these are just simple farmers. These are people of the land. You know, morons.
Hurry, hurry, hurry. Step right up. You will not believe your ears. It's Moran Monday on the Horn, coronavirus edition. Yes, indeed, yes, indeed. Over here, mere steps off the Carnival Midway, stands the Moran Monday tent. A thin cybernetic veil of canvas separating you, friends, neighbors, brothers, sisters, aunts, uncles, cousins, kiddies, moms, dads, sisters, brothers, from the abject moranity of the right wing. We've got them all for you behind the thin cybernetic veil. Birthers, deathers, ninthers, tenthers, baggers, birchers, booger eaters, libertarians, trumpanzees, maggots, coronavirus deniers. They're all here waiting for your shock and your amazement as you make your way through the tent. Yes, indeed. Only moments ago, you were standing on the Carnival Midway throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls in a vain hope of taking home a little baby iguana that might have the coronavirus. You never know. And now, you're waiting. And you know, you can't tell the morans without a program. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the program that tells the morans. You just can't tell them much. But I can tell you, friends, neighbors, that for less than half the cost of a 5-stick pack of chewing gum per day, as a subscriber, you can make sure that the Moran Monday tent sets up in another town
every Monday. Yes, indeed. Standard disclaimers apply. As you enter the Moran Monday tent, keep a close eye and maybe a hand or two, possibly a toe, on bracelets, rings, watches, necklaces, various other jewelry, toe rings, piercings. That iguana that you won throwing ping pong balls at goldfish bowls. Even European-style messenger bags, because, in fact, the Morans can get grabby, and they're contagious as fuck. Head for the hills, or you'll be up to your armpits in Morans, and you'll want to make sure and hit those pits with some hand sanitizer. Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And you want to talk about a carnival of viral sewage? No, Ralphs, it wasn't. It wasn't Wheel of Fortune. There was a. I can't remember the term, but I had buddies in college who absolutely had to get home from class in time to watch that particular game show because there was a little gremlin-type thing that ran out and stole all your money. But it, Joker! No, it wasn't Joker's Wild either. Ron says, how many slots does Drunk Larry Kudlow foreclose when he tells people to go to work? That old boy is so pickled the COVID-19 virus couldn't get a foothold in the toxic fluids coursing through his veins. Yeah, I think it's kind of hard to avoid that conclusion. Yeah, that closes off a couple of slots. So did when Nitwit Nero said,
you know, some people are just going to work and they're fine.
That's why I said last week that he has become an actual vector of the disease. That disinformation, misinformation, bad information can be a disease vector because it will make people who otherwise would not engage in risky behavior do so because they believe every lie that comes spewing out of his filthy, toxic gob. There it is. Press your luck. That was the game show, Scott in San Diego. Thank you. Featuring the dreaded Whammy. That was the one. Yeah. He had a red suit on or something. A little devil kind of imp sort of, yeah. And we really are kind of involved in a game show now. The game show is rigged. Not like how Nitwit Nero said that,
if I don't win, the election's definitely rigged. It's rigged.
No whammies, no whammies. Yeah, that was the hue and cry. Jack in Shreveport remembering. The game with no whammies? If so, my roommates and I used to watch that like crazy, but at nighttime. That was the one. A dear friend of mine whose nickname was PH had to be home from class in time to watch that. He was obsessed. And his nickname, PH, just stood for Peckerhead. Gone are the days. But I can remember him sitting there on the couch saying, no whammies, no whammies, as if he himself was playing. And maybe that's where we are. And we go to, I guess maybe some people do, go to church and go, no whammies, God, no whammies. You go to the grocery store, no whammies. That was it, yeah. Everybody's catching on now, Ron and Raleigh. Was it press your luck? It was press your luck. You go to the post office. No whammies. Go get gas. No whammies. Yeah. And God alone knows if you go to the doctor's office. No whammies. But the news came out over the weekend that two of the most delightful members of the Republican Party in the House of Representatives and the Senate said that they had been informed that I've come in contact with someone who had the coronavirus at CPAC. Yeah, one of those was, of course, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, who said, I'm self-quarantining. But he wasn't exactly clear on when he got exposed and how long his self-quarantine would last. I would suggest that Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, for the good of America, should probably self-quarantine for the rest of his life. And the same goes for Dr. Paul Gosar, the Arizona maggot dentist who put himself into self-quarantine after having come into contact apparently with the same just walking puddle of coronavirus at the Conservative Political Action Conference. Oh, that thing was nasty. And based on something I read earlier, oh, no, that was at AIPAC, because the American Israel Public Affairs Committee, their big shindig included as an uninvited guest the coronavirus. And I saw someone making reference on social media to the fact that the individual who was spreading it there was in the green room. So that meant that the highfalutins who were speaking on stage were exposed. Now, since that time, at least two more members of the Republican Party have self-quarantined. And from the department of it couldn't happen to a nicer guy, do you remember last week when a particularly mouthy maggot had himself photographed wearing a gas mask while pretending to review a piece of legislation? Yes, that was Florida Panhandle maggot representative Matt Gaetz. Har, har, har. Sure was funny. And another, you remember how I've referred to Doug Collins of Georgia as Doug Mouthful of Collards Collins? Well, now he may be Doug Mouthful of Coronavirus Collins, because he's quarantined, because he came in contact with the disease-laden maggot at CPAC. God, it seems like they... you almost imagine them going in and just sort of rubbing and a wallering and LARPing on each other. Nitwit Nero says he's not going to quit shaking hands. He's going to count on hand sanitizer to do the trick for him. And he also said that even though tennis tournaments, South by Southwest, other gatherings have been canceled, that he's going to go on holding maggot rallies and inviting maggots to come and breathe all over each other.
Because it'll be wonderful. There'll be fantastic rallies.
It gets more interesting, though, with regard to Matt Gaetz in particular. Gaetz, more interesting, Matt Gaetz. Don't try this at home. Matt Gaetz was only told that he had been exposed whilst he was flying along on, wait for it, it's on the way, it's coming, it'll be here in a second, any minute now, Air Force One. Melanie Zanona, over at Politico, said, I'm told Getz's office wasn't informed until mid-flight that he had interacted with the infected CPAC attendee, but Getz was tested for coronavirus immediately after he landed, per sources. Mm-hmm. And, of course, he came in contact with Nitwit Nero. So, too, apparently, did Doug Mouthful of Coronavirus Collins. Yeah. And Nitwit Nero has got to be nervous as shit. Because, among other things, there are photographs that show Doug Mouthful of Coronavirus Collins shaking hands with Corona Caligula after the CPAC event where he was exposed. He tweeted, this afternoon, I was notified by CPAC that they discovered a photo of myself and... No. Not that kind of discovered the photo. Discovered a photo of myself and the patient who has tested positive for COVID-19. While I'm not experiencing any symptoms, I've decided to self-quarantine out of an abundance of caution. Yeah. I guess he put that last part in there for Nitwit Nero's benefit. Because, see, well, Matt Getz and Doug Mouthful of Coronavirus Collins and even Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, I'd think twice about LARPing any more boogs there, Rafi. Well, there went dinner in the Central Daylight Time Zone. None of those guys are in that demographic where the coronavirus becomes particularly lethal. Yeah. Nitwit Nero is. Kyle with a note, is it wrong that upon hearing that the maggot lawmakers had been exposed to and probably came into contact with a guy with coronavirus who also had indirect contact with who knows how many other maggots in positions of power, that my first thought was, there's still some hope out there? Yeah, you get a cowbell for that, Kyle. Keep hope alive. Megan wants to know, does this mean Cruz, Collins, Getz, and Gosar will be in quarantine until November 3rd, 2020? Sadly, no. No. On the other hand, the paranoia, according to reporting via Gabriel Sherman at Vanity Fair, I think so. Headline, he's definitely melting down over this. Trump, germaphobe in chief, struggles to control the COVID-19 story. Gabriel Sherman writes, publicly he sees it as yet another fake news media war. Privately he worries about virus-carrying journalists on Air Force One. But cancel his rallies?
I'm not going to do it,
he says. A former West Wing official told Gabriel Sherman he's trying to control the narrative, and he can't. because it's in 34 states now, and the states that it's not in, it's probably more a matter of underreporting than absence of disease. It's in 34 states. And the market is shedding every penny that it's made since he became president. Remember how he used to brag about how high the market was going?
It's the best market ever. It's the highest market ever. Oh, fuck.
Did you catch that part? He's got a case of the galloping paranoids. He thinks that some member of the media, just because we got to go, I want to go through this slowly, just so that we can get the full intensity and effect of the madness. Nitwit Nero has convinced himself that some member of the media, some member of the White House press corps that's allowed to go on Air Force One with him, is going to go out and is going to go out and have somebody with COVID-19 cough all over them, maybe two or three times, and then get on the plane and try to get close enough to Trump to shake his hand and give him the disease. You know, they'd put him in one of those bubble suits, but I don't think they make them that big. I mean, what would that be, like a 58 long? I mean, I'm 6'2 and 220. And I wear a 48 long. So there's no way he's anything less than a 54. But that's where we are. He is melting down in shrieking paranoia, convinced
that the fake news are going to try to give me the hoax, the Democrat hoax disease.
As I observed earlier today, if only we had some constitutional mechanism whereby we could remove from office a president whose brains have degenerated into rancid mushroom soup. If only. I know, Kyle. Kyle says if he's that scared of getting sick, why does he do rallies with more people in attendance than are even on Air Force One? Why not stay quarantined inside the White House where no one could possibly make him sick? Okay, wishful thinking, but nothing he does makes even remote sense on any level. Well, see, he thinks that if he gets a rub down with hand sanitizer and doesn't let anybody within 15 feet of him, and then he goes out and runs one of his MAGA rallies and doesn't shake hands with anybody, he'll be okay. We are talking about someone who likely has an intellectual disability from birth. All this talk over the past 3 years about malignant narcissism, my curiosity about whether maybe there are some spirochetes swimming around in his brain. Well, it kind of clicked for me. This morning, as I was engaging in my filthy morning habit, and I heard either Joe or Mika or one of those multimillionaires, I heard them say that, you know, we had hoped he might change his behavior. That's when the light bulb went on. That's when I realized how fundamentally wrong we've been getting it about him. He can't change his behavior. Not because he doesn't want to, but because he lacks the essential ability to, because it is baked in. Whatever is wrong with him has been wrong with him since he emerged from the womb. And the analogy that I came up with is that it's like asking Helen Keller to sing an aria. I'm sure she'd try, but she was, by virtue of the disability that struck her as an infant, physically unable to do it. And he can't be anything other than the intellectually disabled person that he is. And until we get to that, well, we're here. We've gotten there. Will the multimillionaires? Is there any way of knowing? Elbert says, isn't there a chance that one of the congressmen exposed him to it? Yes. Matt Gaetz was on Air Force One with him. And Doug, mouthful of coronavirus Collins, was shaking hands with him after the CPAC event. Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, hand sanitizer and not getting within a certain distance of people keep you from getting sick sounds like something my grandpa, who never graduated high school, would believe. And although I love him to death, I would not want him as president due to lack of knowledge. Yet we literally allowed someone just like him to become president. Jesus. Yeah. Suman just sent this one along. Devastated stockbrokers. It's a photograph of a Wall Street guy with his head in his hands. Devastated stockbrokers with faces in hands, clearly not taking coronavirus precautions seriously. Dateline, New York. Stockbrokers throughout the world holding their faces in disbelief at the economic consequences of coronavirus have not been taking public health advice seriously. Yeah. Ah, okay, wait. Cowbell for Lottie. They do make bubble suits that big. They really do, Bob. But they say Goodyear on the side. Oh, now you understand the cowbell, don't you? That was quality. Darlene in Connecticut says, quarantine of GOP Congress critters is perfect for them. Cruz, Collins, etc. They have a terrific excuse not to work and still get paid. That's how Mitch likes things. As long as he and his ilk can avoid doing their jobs while still drawing off the public teat, then they're happy. Todd in South Carolina stand pointing out, the pathogen is a natural-born spiller.
Ah.
And the pathogen is the president. And I watched a couple of more documentaries over the weekend, having first watched that one from the ABC in Australia that Darlene recommended to us. None of them paint a much better picture. I saw a report from 60 Minutes Australia that Carol Baker had posted. Apparently, China claims to have shut down tens of thousands of wet markets. But they are still a going concern throughout much of Asia, because it's a big dollar. It's a good dollar. And so they went undercover to a wet market in Bangkok, where they noted that animals from Asia are kept alongside animals from Africa, alongside animals from South America, all of whom have completely different pathology structures and who can cause viruses to jump from one animal to the next. And that it's just that the whole system is a ticking time bomb. The 60 Minutes Australia report pointed out that many of these wet markets are run by, of course, who else? The mob. Because there are people out there who just... And they're mostly wealthy people these days. Who just have a sweet tooth for great big snake or pangolin. And I found myself this weekend thinking a great deal about Anthony Bourdain and how badly or how much better it would have been to have had his input in all of this. Because, of course, he made his bones on Anthony Bourdain eats the beating heart of a cobra. Anthony Bourdain eats monkey brains. Anthony Bourdain eats warthog rectum. And he did. He ate warthog rectum on one of the episodes that he shot in one of the countries in Africa which he visited. And he said he's never been sicker in his life. Days sick. Crawling to the toilet sick. But I suspect he could have explained, or at least made an attempt at explaining, the cultural phenomenon of wanting to eat exotic animals better than most anyone else is doing it. And the other thing I thought of in that conjunction is, lest we get up on our high horses and think, well, you know, we're not like them. Bullshit. I've read of it. I don't know if they still do it, but they have done it in the fairly recent past in France. There's some sort of precious, adorable, sweet little songbird that is endangered and protected by law, and filthy rich people get together and they eat those birds. They eat those birds, and they do so with a linen napkin over their heads as some sort of a fig leaf to protect them against uh, a public odium or legal liability or something like that. And that is that's similar to what's going on in Asia with these wet markets. And so I have this mental image of some poor, struggling human being slaughtering and dismembering a pangolin because some rich member of the Central Committee in Wuhan wanted pangolin for dinner. And we'll probably never know who that rich Central Committee member was, or that rich capitalist, that titan of industry that got this whole thing going. But the idea that a wealthy person thousands of miles away can kill a granny in Iran, a grandpa in Italy, a mother, a father in Washington State. It paints the perfect picture of exactly what we get by letting capitalism run amok. Because, see, there are advocacy groups out there who have warned for years of the pandemic potential of these wet markets. And the Chinese government in particular, but not alone, has mightily resisted the idea of shutting the damn things down. Because it's a good dollar. Oh dear. The coronavirus task force leader, Mike Pence, is yakking now with Nitwit Nero staring, hulking over his shoulder, gorilla-like. Let's check in on the madness.
We have bought a considerable amount of time, according to all the health experts, to deal with the coronavirus here in the United States. In fact, as I stand before you today, the risk of contracting the coronavirus to the American public remains low, and the risk of serious disease among the American public also remains low. That being said, the president did deploy not just a whole-of-government approach, but also a whole-of-America approach. And last week, at the president's direction...
And not to mention a whole-of-ass approach.
...to airlines, pharmaceutical companies, commercial labs, and it's had great, great impact. Pharmaceutical companies are already working literally around the clock on the development of therapeutics that will be medicines that can bring relief to people that contract the coronavirus. And I know how pleased the president was to learn that the commercial labs in this country, led by companies like LabCorp and Quest, have already brought a test forward and are taking that to market effective today.
And are going to charge us out the ass for it.
With hospital CEOs, health insurance CEOs, and all building on top of what the president will be announcing tomorrow with regard to economic relief for working Americans. We also met today in a conference call with 47 of America's governors. We were able to brief them on the latest, the progress that we've made. We were able to confirm with them that testing is now available in all state labs in every state in the country. Over 1 million tests have been distributed before the end of this week. Another 4 million tests will be distributed. But as I said...
Do you believe that?
the deployment of the commercial labs, we literally are going to see a dramatic increase in the availability of testing, and that's all a direct result of the president's leadership. Today, in a few moments, we will outline community guidance that Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci will be publishing. The president's direction, we're going to be providing guidance about how to keep your home safe, how to keep your business safe, how to keep safe and healthy at your school, and we'll be publishing that information and speaking about that. A brief word about the Grand Princess. The Grand Princess has docked this afternoon in Oakland, California, at a commercial dock. 25 children, we were happy to learn through the screening over the last 2 days, the 25 children on the ship are all healthy. Of the people that have contracted the coronavirus, 21 in all, they are being dealt with in proper isolation, working with health authorities in California. We hope before the end of today to begin to disembark California residents to Travis Air Force Base in Miramar. We've made arrangements with Canada and the UK to take their passengers back. They'll be transported directly to the tarmac, charter flights home. Tomorrow, the remaining passengers will be transported again through very, very carefully controlled environments, buses, out to the tarmac and fly.
Ah, so a bus is now a very carefully controlled environment. How reassuring.
Will be tested, isolated as appropriate, quarantined as appropriate, and I want to express appreciation to the governor of California and his administration, the governor of Georgia, the governor of Texas, for their strong cooperation with us in resolving the issues around.
Huh. Did he mention Washington? I got Tennessee and Georgia and Texas, right?
From the very beginning, and the process that Bob Cadleck will detail in any questions in a few moments continues to work and move forward. The remaining people on the ship, the crew itself, will push off from the dock, and they will be quarantined and observed and treated shipboard. But the president made the priority to get the Americans ashore, and we're in the process of doing that, as well as returning foreign nationals. Let me just say one other point. As the president has spoken today to congressional leadership, one of the things that I informed the president that I had been hearing from governors is the concern about hourly wage earners in this country feeling that they had to go to work even if they were ill.
The president
has tasked this economic team and is working already with leaders in the Congress to make sure that that anyone feels that they are at risk of losing their job or losing a paycheck because they may contract the coronavirus. When we tell people, if you're sick, stay home, and the president has tasked the team with developing economic policies that will make it very, very clear that we're going to stand by those hardworking Americans, stand by those businesses, large and small, and make it possible for us, as the president said from the very beginning, to put the health of America first. We'll be available to take any questions on any of these topics, but, Mr. President, I didn't know if you wanted to speak
a few more.
Well, I
think what we will be doing is having a news conference tomorrow to talk about various things that we're doing economically. They'll be very major, including, obviously,
very major,
the payroll tax cut. And so we'll be meeting again tomorrow afternoon.
And again, they called this press conference not because of the coronavirus, but because the market shit 2,000 points today.
And we'll explain what we're doing on an economic standpoint and from an economic standpoint. But they will be very, very dramatic. And we have a great economy.
Oh,
we have a very strong economy.
Lovely.
But this blindsided the world. And I think we've handled it very, very well. I think they've done a great job. The people behind me have done a great job. So I will be here tomorrow afternoon to let you know about some of the economic steps we're taking, which will be major.
Economics.
Thank you very much.
Have you been tested?
Have you been tested? He's doing it again.
Have you been tested?
He's doing it again. He just wandered. He just galumped and wandered out of the room.
Has the president been tested?
He's been in contact with people who were in proximity to somebody who had the virus.
Let me be sure and get you an answer to that. I honestly don't know the answer to the question. but we'll refer that question and we will get you an
answer.
I'll
be sure and get you an answer to that.
Physician, very quickly. Let me ask Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx to come to the podium. You all and the American public will have at their fingertips very quickly guidance that this is for every American. We're working with communities like the Seattle area, like portions of California, New York, and Florida that have what we call community spread, a concentration of coronavirus cases. But we directed our team to come up with helpful recommendations for every American family, every American business and school. And if Dr. Birx and Dr. Fauci step forward, they can outline that for you.
Great. Thank you. Good evening. It was good about getting out last week, meeting with communities. We know that the real solutions to this is every American has a role in stopping the spread of the virus. And so we wanted to really put out guidance for every American and every community that was practical and common sense, but detailed in a way that everyone would know precisely what to do. The guidance will be around how to keep workplaces safe, how to keep schools safe, how to keep the home safe, and how to keep commercial businesses safe where people would eat or be present. The importance about this is we believe that communities are at the center of this. I came from a field where it was the communities that really solved our issues around HIV prevention. And so we're very much speaking to the communities and the American people.
This is Dr. Deborah Birx, the White House Coronavirus Response Coordinator. Wait, she came from somewhere that they had an HIV. Oh, dear. Is she one of the ones who helped Mike Pence set fire to Scott County, Indiana? Because the Surgeon General is. You may have noted over the weekend that he declared that Nitwit Nero sleeps, quote, sleeps less than I do every night, and he's in better health than I am. So Surgeon General Adams is no more a truth teller than Dr. Candyman Jackson, Ronnie Jackson, was. Here's Anthony Fauci.
I've had this for a long time, as has Dr. Birx and I, so we thought we would put it together in a neat form way that would be available to the general public. What Dr. Birx had mentioned is that just the other day I got one of many, many emails where some of my colleagues that I know from Australia actually decided they were going to write a paper on it and make a number of boxes, which was exactly saying what we had been talking about. So we came up with the idea it would be very good for...
Yeah, Arnold just noted, having listened to Nitwit Nero speak, yeah, this motherfucker definitely has it. Listen to him. Yeah.
At the workplace, these are really simple, low-tech things. There's nothing in there that's complicated, but it's just stated in a way that's clear that people can understand.
I might ask the Surgeon General if there's anything about the guidance you want to reflect on.
Well, one thing I want folks to know is that we have been looking at the data from around the world, and we now know more than we ever have about who is at risk. Who is at risk, and I hope you will help us communicate this to the American people, are people over the age of 60. They're much more likely to develop complications from the coronavirus and to be hospitalized from the coronavirus. The average age of death is age 80. Now, what we also want communities to know is that if you are a child or young adult, you're more likely to die from the flu, if you get it, than you are to die from coronavirus. So there is something about being young that is protective. We want people to be reassured by that. We want people to know that we are really focusing in on those groups that are at highest risk for complications and helping them understand how to be safe. And this new advice that's going to be coming out tomorrow is designed to keep our communities safe, to help keep the most vulnerable safe. And it's important to understand that even though young people aren't at risk for dying from coronavirus, they can potentially spread that to older people in the communities and people with chronic diseases, So it's important we all take precautions, washing our hands, covering our cough, keeping our distance from people who are sick, and taking the steps that will be coming out in this new guidance to help make sure we're doing everything we know possible to keep our most vulnerable protected.
Great. Well done. Thank you. And I'm going to – I think the Surgeon General raises a very important point.
When are you going to tell us to pray, Mike?
My mother was 88 years young, same age. This is just a really good time. What Dr. Fauci tells us, what the experts tell us, is to look after family members, loved ones who are senior citizens, and particularly those who have serious underlying health conditions. All the data, Dr. Birx, confirms to us that they're the most vulnerable to serious consequences if they contract the coronavirus. But the guidance that we would ask members of the media and the American public looking on, you can go to coronavirus.gov. This information will be posted tonight, and hopefully it will be useful, helpful, common sense for families, for schools, for businesses, and for commercial establishments that welcome the public in, just to create the kind of practices that we believe will mitigate the spread of the coronavirus across the country as a whole. But with regard to seniors, I might just ask Seema Verma to step up and speak about. Last week at the president's direction, we raised the standards for every nursing home in America with regard to infectious disease, and we are deploying all 8,000 of our inspectors in every state, as we told the governors today, to focus exclusively on infectious disease compliance at our nursing homes. Our hearts break for the families at the Kirkland Nursing Home in Seattle. The loss of life has been grievous, but we are sending the message out, working with our governors to make sure our nursing homes and long-term care facilities have the additional layer of protection against the spread of the coronavirus. And maybe you'd give us
thank you. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. As he said, that's exactly where our focus is. It's around infection control. We're working with the entire healthcare industry. Today, we issued more guidance to nursing homes about really upping their screening of people that are coming into the nursing home and making sure that, you know, they're gloved and they have masks so that we can protect people that are in the nursing homes. The other thing that we're doing is because we know that many of our senior citizens are vulnerable, we want to make sure that they know that the Medicare program is behind them and we're here to support them. We're letting our patients know that they can get a coronavirus test and that there is no cost sharing associated with that for our seniors on the Medicare program. And we're also letting them know that because of the president's leadership, over a year and a half ago, he took action to actually extend more telehealth benefits to our nation's seniors. And this is a very historic change that we made under the president's leadership. And so if they're sick and they're ill, they can call their doctor, they can Skype with their doctor, and Medicare will reimburse for those services. And we've also, in our conversations with governors today, we've talked about having telehealth services also available in the Medicaid program.
Great. Let me invite Bob Cadlick, who is Deputy Secretary of HHS, to come forward as well fill us in on the latest on the progress on the Grand Princess.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
That is dockside now and is going through a very careful process of having Americans and foreign nationals come off, and everyone will be tested.
Thank you very much, sir. And, yes, we began our medical operation to basically disembark those passengers on Saturday. We put in place the medical crew on that boat to augment the physicians and nurses that were already on the ship. We basically ensured that the quarantine on the boat and isolation were being enforced, and then evaluated first the children and those who were ill, identifying anyone who is severely ill if possible. When the boat arrived on dockside today, additional medical personnel came on board, and we began an orderly disembarkation. Our intent is to basically disembark about half of the passengers on the boat today and the other half tomorrow. And everyone will be medically screened before they get off. If there's any question about their physical or health, they'll be screened again more additionally. And then they'll be transferred to one of the four quarantine sites in the United States, Travis Air Force Base, Miramar Naval Air Station, Lackland Air Force Base, and Dobbins Air Force Base in Georgia. The foreign passengers will be transferred. The Canadians will be taken back to Canada, and we're working with the United Kingdom to return their passengers back to the United Kingdom. But we're doing this all in cooperation with the great support of the state of California, the city of Oakland, and with the support of the Department of Defense, Department of Homeland Security, and the U.S. Coast Guard. Thank you.
Great. And on the subject of testing, we had a very good discussion today, as I mentioned, with 47 governors, and outlined for them all of the different testing methods that are available. We have tests now in every state lab in America, but we're rapidly expanding that. And let me ask the Secretary of HHS to give us the latest on the availability of testing to the American public and to the states.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Vice President. So we continue with our strategic plan at HHS across all of the components represented by many of the leaders here, which is to diagnose, to treat, to contain, to mitigate, to research, and communicate. It's what we do in a healthcare crisis situation. One element of that is the test, which, of course, CDC developed in record time after getting the genetic sequence posted from China. That then was available at CDC, and from that point on, there was no individual that a public health official needed to get tested that CDC didn't have surplus capacity to test. But we've been moving progressively to bring that test closer and closer and closer to the patient and to the bedside and to make it as easy as possible for us to use testing, very much in line with our peer countries facing similar epidemiological circumstances. At this point, we, as many of you who were here on Saturday for the briefing know, we have over 1 million tests that have shipped from CDC and two private contractors that are the CDC type of test. Those are now out, and as the Vice President mentioned, every state public health lab is validated and operating those tests. In addition, hundreds of thousands of those tests are in hospitals, in private labs, in commercial labs. We now have a total of 2.1 million tests that are available, either shipped or waiting to be shipped or waiting to be ordered. We, by the end of this week, expect to be able to be producing up to 4 million tests per week in the United States. And that is on top of what the private commercial entities, the companies you know of like LabCorp or Quest, using their technology, the test that they're getting out, which is an even better experience for the patient because those work, they are able to actually collect samples directly in doctor's offices, have a very sophisticated collection system to their labs, again, making it a very much more seamless patient experience. They're now validated and getting up and running, and that you'll see even more of that. So as I said, over the next week or so, you're just going to see a progressively better patient and physician and provider experience connected to diagnostic testing here in the United States. Thank you.
So how many have been tested so far? Do you have that
number? Maybe questions in just a moment. Yep. We'll come back. We'll come back. With that, I want to invite the director of CDC to come forward just to give you an overview of where we are in the country with regard to cases, and then we'll take questions on any of the topics.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. We do continue to see an increased number in cases. Again, as we said we would, as time passes, we currently have over 500 cases now in the United States outside of the repatriation cases and the cases on the Diamond Princess. We now have cases in 35 states that have been reported in the District of Columbia.
This is Dr. Robert Redfield, Director of
the CDC. I want to reiterate what the Vice President said, despite what I just said here, is that at the present time, the risk to the American public does remain low. We do have several community outbreaks, which we're focusing on in the Seattle area, in the Santa Clara, California area, in Westminster, in New York, and in Florida. And these are areas that we're investigating heavily to try to understand the transmission mechanisms there and begin to help these jurisdictions begin to operationalize a series of mitigation strategies to help, again, to slow and contain the outbreak. Thank you.
And let me say, just before we go to questions, coronavirus.gov, for the American public, for healthcare professionals, it is a comprehensive website. We're adding to it every day. And also, Dr. Birx, we're working very diligently to establish a single website where people can go to track all of the cases and where they're emerging. Questions, please.
Could I ask you and Secretary Mnuchin, if I could, the stock market, a huge slide today, and people on Wall Street now talking about the possibility of recession. Some people saying it's a better than 50-50 chance that that will happen. How worried are you that that will happen?
Well, let me just first say, today was an unprecedented move in the oil market. So, you know, we saw a overnight reaction of over down 20%. And that's obviously what had a major component today on the stock market. But let me just make a couple of comments more broadly about the economy. First of all, we couldn't be more pleased that coming into the situation with the coronavirus, the U.S. has the most resilient economy in the world. You saw a very large economic jobs number last month. And we couldn't be more pleased that the president's economic programs of tax cuts, regulatory relief, and trade have put the economy in a very good position. I would also just say that I am in daily conversations with Chair Powell. We are committed, and we just had a meeting with the president and the economic team. The president is committed that...
Hey, dumbass, he's fresh out of interest rates to cut.
All our tools, working very closely with the regulators. The president has the bank CEOs coming in this week. We'll be talking to them about what they can do to help small businesses and companies that are impacted. So let me just again emphasize our primary focus is there are parts of the economy that are going to be impacted, especially workers that need to be at home, hardworking people who are at home under quarantine or taking care of their family. We'll be working on a program to address that. We will also be working with small businesses who need liquidity through SBA programs. We're looking at alternatives at the IRS. We have large tax payments coming up of providing certain relief to companies and individuals for liquidity. So the president is 100% committed that we will provide whatever tools we need, that the economy will be in very good shape a year from now. This is not like the financial crisis where we don't know the end in sight. This is about providing proper tools and liquidity to get through the next few months.
Follow-up.
Well, let me just say there are certain authorities that the president has that we can do on our own, and we've already cataloged those tools. We have a large group, a sub-task force of Treasury and NEC working on this. We are also working with bipartisan leadership on a whole range of alternatives that we'll be discussing with them tomorrow. And as you know, we had bipartisan agreement on the spending deal. We will use the same approach to work with the leadership.
Obey the law and turn over his taxes, dick.
You just said that you have not been tested. You said you don't know if the president has been tested. But today we learned that the president has interacted with two lawmakers who have interacted with someone who is positive for coronavirus. So why not get tested?
Well, I just simply don't know what the White House physician has recommended to the president, but I promise you we'll get you that information.
When do you think you could let us know if the president has been
because
tested?
Because he has we'll fantastic genes.
Right away. Yeah, look, this is obviously the White House physician is their directive is to see to the health and well-being of the President of the United States, and we'll get you a very direct answer
well,
on that.
Sounds like a fine.
I've had no recommendation that I would be tested, and but let me just say to everyone, I really do believe
who was diseased,
that the guidance that we put out today would be very helpful and very encouraging to Americans. It was fashioned by Dr. Birx, Dr. Fauci, some of the leading experts in infectious disease in the world. And for families that are looking on tonight to go to coronavirus.gov, you can find information about how you can just make your home safer, your family safer, your school safer, your business safer, and we recommend that to your attention. Yes, please.
President, do you believe, and does the president believe, that what happened in the stock market today and what we're seeing among American industries, some of which the president named today as being affected and in trouble here, are in any way a result of this White House's reaction to the coronavirus crisis? Is this the markets and American businesses saying that you guys are not enough in trouble and didn't think enough ahead?
Well, I have to tell you, I'm about a week and a half into being asked to lead the president's White House coronavirus task force.
I'm about a week and a half into being a patsy. And I'm so goddamn dim. I think Jesus wants me to be here, and that somehow or another I might get to be president. But the fact of the matter is, goddamn it, he put me here to hang me out to dry, and he's going to throw my ass under the bus so hard. If only I had enough brains to realize that.
The decisive action in declaring a public health emergency, I really do believe that the American people can see that this president is putting the health of the American people first. But make no mistake about it, as we go forward, and particularly as we have more testing available, we have these communities that have community spread, there will be more cases. But we simply ask, we ask today for the American public to join with us in the common sense practices that will mitigate the spread of the coronavirus.
You mean the science
and
you
also
don't believe
particularly,
in?
We're asking every American to look after our seniors who have serious underlying health issues. They are clearly the most vulnerable, and that's where the focus of our energy is today, even as we do everything that we can, working with governors at every level, state and local public health officials, to limit the spread of the virus.
If I could ask you a question of Dr. Fauci. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Dr. Fauci.
You're up to it. more and more organizations, charities are canceling fundraising events, other events. Is that prudent? Is that an overreaction? Do you think the president should continue with campaign rallies? And do you believe that people, even if they're healthy, should get on board a cruise ship?
Okay, so there's multiple different questions, John. So the idea about individual entities, governors, mayors, or whatever, canceling activities that are not coming from a direct recommendation from the federal government, I think that they have I know they have the authority to do that, but what they're probably acting on is what they would consider for their citizens an abundance of caution. Most of the time when that happens, it usually is in an area where there is already documented community spread. And Dr. Redfield mentioned the four areas right now that are having community spread that's documented. But, you know, there may be, as we know, it's a possibility that there's community spread going on in areas in which we're not detecting it yet. And I think that's the response of the individuals, be they mayors or...
Yeah, consider California, Washington, New York, all have viable as it can be in this country, healthcare programs to provide, well, among other things, expanded Medicaid. What happens when this thing busts out in Alabama, in Mississippi, Tennessee, Arkansas, Missouri? And the only thing Nitwit Nero can do is to
we're going to do a payroll tax cut.
Payroll tax cut isn't wage replacement. Dave pointing out, we went upwards of a minute without praise for the leader of this administration. There will be hell to pay.
Cruises over the spring break. Oh, do you recommend that anybody, even a healthy person, get on board a cruise ship?
Yeah, I think if you're a healthy young person, that there is no reason, if you want to go on a cruise ship, to go on a cruise ship. Personally, I would never go on a cruise ship because I don't like cruises. But that's another story. But the fact is that if you have the conditions that I've been speaking about over and over again to this group, namely an individual who has an underlying condition, particularly an elderly person that has underlying condition, I would recommend strongly that they do not go on a cruise ship.
And let me also say, John, I think you raise a good point. We're expecting a proposal tomorrow. The DHS, the Coast Guard, all of our health officials are currently discussing with the cruise line industry. I was in Miami on Saturday. We made it very clear that we needed cruise lines to be safer, to establish and to embrace new protocols, screening onboard, screening off, new medical protocols, shipboard processes for evacuating people that may contract coronavirus or a serious illness. And I know the president was grateful that our cruise line leadership all stepped up to the table. They said they're ready to go to the next level. And so we'll be reviewing that proposal tomorrow with the objective that apart from the Americans that Dr. Fauci just described, the seniors with serious underlying conditions, we're going to work with the cruise line industry to improve the safety, improve the health environment on cruise lines in the short term and in the long term. Yes,
President. Thank you.
Sorry, I got it. Last time President Trump was in this room, he told us that the number of U.S. cases was 15 and would soon go down to zero. You guys are saying today that the number is going up and it's more than 500. What is the discrepancy and how was he so wrong on that number?
I think what the president was referring to is that we will have people that test positive.
What the president was referring to was the numbers that exist only in the thin gray settlings that slosh around between his ears and pass for brains. But isn't he wonderful?
Majority of people who contract the coronavirus will get better. And the president's just challenged our task force as the numbers grow, and they will. We'll continue to test more and more Americans. We are, as I'm standing here.
Any minute now, one of them's going
to
say,
that it's also important to remember that people, with the vast majority, get better completely. Some large percentage have mild flu symptoms. Some have serious flu symptoms. But then, of course, for the Americans you heard the Surgeon General refer to,
flu
seniors
symptoms
with underlying serious health conditions, Dr. Fauci referred to, We're committed to lean in and to make sure they have the support they need. But the president's focus here is just making sure people understand that while the numbers grow, there are people that come off the list because they get better. And Dr. Birx, did you want to reflect on what we know about the cycle the coronavirus?
Yes, reflections.
Yeah, thank you. So we know the coronavirus reacts a lot like the flu in the way it spreads and in the way we prevent it. And so when we put out the guidelines to the American people, they will reinforce their guidelines, and we hope the number of flu cases go down too, because people will really be what we call situational awareness. I did want to add one piece to our cautions about people with pre-existing condition. We also know that there are children with pre-existing conditions, and we know that there are individuals that are undergoing chemotherapy for their treatment of cancer. For those individuals, if they have what we call decreased number of white cells, and they will have that discussions with the doctors, they are given often a sheet of paper that really describes how they need to protect themselves and how their family needs to protect them. So I want to make sure that we understand, yes, we're concerned about the elderly, we're concerned about others with pre-existing condition, but we're also concerned about anybody who may be in an immunodeficiency state, having less white cells and less able to combat any virus. We want to protect all of them from the flu, and we want to protect all of them from coronavirus, and that's why these guidelines are particularly important.
Last question.
It really is important, I think. I want to ask all of the journalists in the room, do what you can to distribute this information, coronavirus.gov, because exactly the reason that Dr. Birx just said so well, that we want to make sure that families have the tools, businesses have the tools, even in areas where we don't have a significant outbreak of the coronavirus.
By the way, Dr. Birx won't be on that team very long. She was actually appointed global HIV/AIDS coordinator and confirmed by the Senate under Barack Obama. So, you know, don't look for her to be on that team for much longer.
And as a follow-up to a question that was asked earlier, are the president's tweets hurting your efforts at all? Because he's accused the Democrats and some of the members of the press of making more of this than he says it is. He's made lighter of it than you all have here. So has his tweets hurt you? And can you please tell us how many Americans have been tested?
I'm happy to do that. The president's leadership has made the difference here. I heard it again today from 47 governors. Governor Larry Hogan joined me in the Situation Room. He's the chairman of the National Governors Association. I think every American would be inspired if you could see the way under the president's leadership and in cooperation with governors in every state and every territory, we literally are working seamlessly on behalf of the health of the American people. I'm going to invite the Secretary of HHS to come up and speak about how the number of tests that have been done and where we are, and the tests that are available he's addressed, but in terms of those that have been conducted.
So we've told you, we'll tell you what we know and what we don't know, okay? So there are different types of tests that get sent out. The CDC's test that CDC is sending out, that's that 70, the enough to test 75,000 people that was sent out last week. Those go to public health labs, about 80 labs in the United States, one in each state at least. Those report results back in to the CDC because they're part of the public health network. The larger quantity of tests that shipped, about 900,000 of the tests that shipped by this weekend, and then so many of the remainder of that total 2.1 million tests, those go to hospitals, private labs, others for testing. They don't currently have to report to us that they've conducted a test or what the result of that test is. The CDC is actively working right now to build that IT connectivity with them so we can gather that information. So right now, I could not give you a number of how many Americans have received a test because many will have received a test through hospitals or non-public health labs. And so let's work. We're getting the system, the IT system, up through CDC. We want to give you accurate information as we go. Dr. Redfield, is that fair?
If I may, everyone, we'll be back here tomorrow. And we'll continue to bring the latest information forward to the American people. Again, let me encourage all of you here and everyone looking on around the country to go to coronavirus.gov, get really useful, practical, common sense recommendations about how to make your home safer, how to make your school safer, how to make your business and any enterprise
out there safer.
These are practical recommendations from the best experts in America, and we commend them to your attention. But let me also just have a word of encouragement to everyone. I want to say again, all of our medical experts, apart from the areas where we have community spread and we're focusing resource, the risk of contracting the coronavirus for the average American remains low. It will remain that way more so if all of us continue to practice common sense habits in our home, in our businesses, in our schools, in our public institutions. And so it's important to remember what President Trump said. We're all in this together. It's not just going to be a whole of government approach. It's a whole of America approach. And together, we'll get through the coronavirus.
Jesus.
Again, details on all the latest information, coronavirus.gov. Thank you.
Fascinating. Because most people won't get it. Well, I guess what? There's 330 million people in the United States. Divide that by two. That's 115 million. So, yeah, most people won't get it. But that's playing really fast and loose with the idea of most. Because, as we know, the American Hospital Association was recently briefed by one epidemic specialist who said that we can expect up to 96 million infections. He said of those 96 million, there will be 4.8 million hospitalizations in a country that has less than 1 million hospital beds. And that there will be near a 500,000 deaths out of those. All of this with the backdrop of inadequate testing, inadequate treatment, inadequate healthcare infrastructure. So, you know, what the default position becomes is that what we, you know, for people like Mike Pence, what we've got left is praying. As Darlene in Connecticut points out, can just one journalist ask whether the Trump administration's unrelenting attempts to eliminate pre-existing conditions from the ACA is now short-sighted considering this pandemic? Just one? Well, I'll see that question and raise you another, Darlene. Could one of those multimillionaires, do you suppose, ask them whether they are now rethinking the administration's support in the Supreme Court of the United States for the appeals court decision out of the Circuit Court of Appeals in Texas that struck down the Affordable Care Act? Because maybe the middle of an emerging pandemic might be a good time to say, hey, let's not be trying to take health care away from tens of millions of American citizens. Even if it's really shitty health care with $10,000 deductibles, let's not take that away from people. That'd be quite a little 1-2 punch question. Tandem, wouldn't it, Darlene? Holy shit, says Megan. Does this administration give a shit about anything other than fellating the president and his leadership abilities? My mother is 66 years old, has had cancer, and works with a bunch of sniffling Trump supporters who prance around saying this is all a Democratic hoax to destroy rotting pumpkin guts. Soothing his wounded ego is the very last of the last of my worries. God damn. These people haven't a clue what's going on. He gets asked a straightforward question. How many people have been tested? And this lying Christian hems and haws and stutters and stammers and obfuscates and evades. And then at the end says, we don't really know. We just don't know. Sorry, ask Jesus. Ooh, that would be interesting. Dave with a suggestion. A horn fundraising idea. How about a 50-50 raffle for who gets closest to the date and time the ArcGIS ticker hits 200,000 or a million, whatever. And what Dave's talking about is the website. It's at arcgis.com, and it is at it's run by Johns Hopkins, and that's what I've been relying on for the number of confirmed cases, the number of total deaths, and the total recovered. And even during the course of a 3-hour program, the numbers move. We're still standing at 113,582 for total confirmed. Total deaths, 3,996. Total recovered, 62,503. And, you know, there's no good answer to the one question that was put. How can you square up what's going on now with the fact that he said that there were 15 and soon it would be zero? And so you heard the cheap, tawdry, pathetic attempt to evade that. What's the old line from Dashiell Hammett? From the Maltese Falcon. The cheaper the hood, the gaudier the patter. Getting pretty gaudy out there, isn't it? Scott in San Diego says, now, about those handshakes in the era of coronavirus, according to my pal Mark Evanier's News from Me blog, His pal Tom Galloway was at the San Diego Comic Fest this past weekend. He reports that in lieu of shaking hands, he was exchanging Mr. Spock's live long and prosper gesture from Star Trek. Well, eventually we'll probably all wind up getting back to bowing at each other, George Washington style. Oh, and interestingly, I mentioned, and I'm going to the phones in a minute, but I mentioned what a damn shame it is that we don't have Bourdain handy to discuss this. Brother Deacon Asa says, you're in luck, Bob. He's gone, but he did weigh in on the whole consumption of exotic animals business. Here's a listening recommendation for the Horn Family Community Congregation. Go listen to the January 7th and 14th, 2013 episodes of Star Talk, A Seat at the Table with Anthony Bourdain. Star Talk, A Seat at the Table with Anthony Bourdain, January 7th and 14th, 2013. He does very much talk about the idiocy associated with the consumption of exotic animals. And Jimmy in the Great Northwest let me know the little bird that the French like to eat with napkins over their head is the ortolan. O-R-T-O-L-A-N. So thanks both to Brother Deacon Asa and to Jimmy in the Great Northwest. Meanwhile, the program's damn near over. I got about 35 minutes left in the program and $205 left to raise to stay even with the beginning of the second week of March. So thanks very kindly to Barbara and to Steve and Karen, little Cletus and little Twiggy, for getting us started this evening. Thank you both very kindly indeed. Hey, you triathlete, you!
Hi. That's me.
That is you.
Can you hear me?
I got you.
Okay. Okay. No, I, I did it. I survived. I'm not sore. I was the last motherfucker coming in. it was awesome because if anybody has ever ridden a bike around a bunch of people who are used to riding bikes really quickly or whatever, it's very terrifying. So since I was, the last on the lane, I had the whole road to myself because they hadn't pulled up the cones yet. So they were pulling up the cones behind me. So, and then when I got to the pool, I was the only one in the pool. So I didn't have, I have part of the experience of doing a triathlon with a bunch of people when I did my run and when I did the, for the bike. But as far as transitioning and going from bike to swim, I still don't know what that feels like because I was the only one in the pool. And the water was, the water felt so good. It was so warm. And the lifeguards were like, you could take your time. You could do any stroke you want. I'm like, two. So I turned over on my back and just did the backstroke for the whole swim. So that meant I did not really have to use my legs or anything like that. It was glorious. Maybe that's why I'm not sore. Because by the time I got to the pool and the water was warm, maybe it just gave my legs a chance to just like. But it was an exciting experience. And yes, I'm gonna do another one. I just got a. Now I'm getting all these emails for triathlons. That's the fun part. But the distances are still too much for me right now. There's one that's a quarter of a mile swim, which I found out was like 400 yards. And there's another one that's 300 yards, meters and stuff like that. So I was struggling with 150 meters. So, yeah, I'm not ready for the 400 meters yet or the 300 meters. So, but anyway, it was awesome. So now back to that press conference that we just listened, that torturous.
That sad, transparent, silly parade of lies.
Of lies and.
I mean, maybe not from Dr. Fauci. Maybe not from Dr. Bix. But Mnuchin, Alex Azar, the dude who's the Surgeon General who said.
The one that said that he.
Yeah.
Trump is healthier than I am.
Yeah, it's just a hot mess.
And when you were asking what's the proper term for what that, he should have been saying when he said that Trump is healthier than he is or whatever, he should have been saying, yes, sir, boss. What y'all want me to say about your health there, sir? What they, you know, oh, fucking uncle. So we got an Uncle Tom for a surgeon. It's just Surgeon General. It is beyond reason. And when somebody asks about the economic impact, and if, you know, trying to compare it to 2008, oh well, you know, that's different from this because, you know, there was no end in sight. There's no end in sight for this either. They don't know what's going to go, how long this is going to, what's happening with this. We got idiots running the country. And who's the Secretary of Health and Human Services?
Alex Azar. He's a former pharma executive.
But he's not a doctor. Is he a doctor?
No, hell no.
Okay, see. So we got people running the country and running these our various departments that have absolutely no experience running in anything remotely, you know, to do with these departments. And now we are in teetering on a pandemic. Are we already in the pandemic?
The world is.
We're not. So we are teetering on the edge of a pandemic. And we have the Keystone Cops running our country.
Thereabouts.
Is that a pretty good assessment of what's happening here?
Yes.
Okay. I have to call in or listen to the show just to make sure that, you know, I have a pretty good take on what's happening. And so, yeah, no. I am just, it is beyond, you know, I mean, like, I'm not scared yet. I'm very concerned. And I am also glad that I did not pay for that cruise that was going to be docking in Greece and Italy.
Yeah, I don't think no. Mm-mm. Oh, and by the way, just David in South Carolina, Stan, just provided us some more numbers. Using the conservative estimates for the coronavirus, and that conservative estimate, you know, like when Mike Pence was saying, well, most people won't even get sick. That shit? Okay, so if only 40% of the population of the United States becomes infected, and if only 1% of the infected people die, you're looking at somewhere around 1,324,000 deaths. And the person sharing this, Leah McElrath, said that's a number three times as big as the total American deaths from World War II.
And like you said,
that's almost the entire population, just to give you an idea. It's almost the entire population of the state of West Virginia. It's more than the population of, say, Wyoming or Montana or North Dakota or South Dakota, most likely.
Can I be evil for one quick second?
You be anything you want. You're a triathlete.
Would it be so terrible? Would it be, you know, this is coming from somebody who purports to be a Christian, but right now, I'm thinking about them letting them have their Nazi rallies. I mean, his campaign rallies. I mean, Nazi rallies, and just take them all out. But the problem is, they have to interact with other people. See, that's where, you know, I'm like, shit. If, you know, if they all get sick,
right.
So what?
Because the key to mass outbreak of disease, the first thing you have to comprehend is that your protection system is only as good, you know, it's the whole thing about a chain only being as strong as its weakest link. So it's not how well can states that have decent systems in place handle it. It's how well can Alabama handle it? How well can Louisiana handle it? How well can Arkansas and Missouri?
And North Carolina, where my mother lives.
Right.
And South Carolina, where Todd lives. And West Virginia, where you live.
Right. And I mean, so for instance...
in Georgia, where my brother
Louisiana and West Virginia have the expanded Medicare or Medicaid. Now, there's still going to be a whole lot of people left out of that mix.
But, like you.
But they've got it, okay? But a Mississippi, a Alabama, Jesus Christ, an Idaho... The potential is there to have the thing set the whole damn states on fire. Because even at that modest 40% estimate, Jesus.
No, because, you know, we have, like you said, I now have to worry about the motherfucker coming here from, you know, one of these, you know, petri dish states now that I'm going to start calling them because, you know, they're not going to have the kind of health care protections that we have in California. I'm not even worried about people from other countries. I'm worried about the motherfuckers from, and the people, you know, like Mike Pence, who feel, you know, that they believe in disease or what have you, or vaccinations
consider both APAC and CPAC went forward, even though they already knew it was spreading. Even though they already knew it was a problem in the United States, they said, ah, fuck it. There's a buck to be made.
Well, it's the same thing. There was a cruise ship that docked here. I think it was a Carnival cruise. And I don't think they quarantined the people for a little while. They checked everybody was fine. And so, you know, all those people disembarked. And then these other people got on, and it was like, there's no fucking way that I would be going on a cruise right now. It's a fucking floating petri dish. And then my sister, you know, the flight attendant, she's still out for work, not because of coronavirus or anything like that. I think I told you, she went dancing right before Christmas when she was on the way over in Orlando. Yeah, and a big girl stepped on her foot and broke her foot.
Ooh.
So she still can't work. So I'm like, well, she's like, she's bored out of her mind. I said, yeah, but aren't you glad you're not working right now? Because, you know, she's a union employee. Therefore, you know, she has, you know, she's like, she's making more money sitting at home than she would be working anyway. I said, so you're very lucky that you're not on, you know, you're not working on a plane right now anyway. Because again, she, you know, she's pretty damn healthy, but she has respiratory issues.
And those matter in this circumstance.
And those, yeah, because she, you know, she still every so often uses an inhaler. So I'm like, I know you're bored because my sister is very active. She's like, you know, and I said, dude, be so happy that, you know, hopefully you will, by the time you come back to work, they'll have a handle on this shit. But at this point, again, we have, you know, like I said, the Keystone fucking cops running this country. So God only knows. And I think what you were earlier about, these are the cases that we actually know about. What about the ones that we don't know about, or haven't even been reported, or people who are symptomatic,
right,
who
that's
don't
the,
realize
that's the one
that they
thing.
Have the coronavirus?
You've got asymptomatic people who are carrying and spreading.
Right.
So you may not even feel bad, but you can carry it and spread it, and that's what makes it more dangerous.
See, and here's the thing.
And yeah, like, knowing what a shit-eating coward Trump is, you know he's got to, and well, it's like the Vanity Fair article that I referenced earlier. He's melting down about this. At this point in time, he did the same thing that he did last week. As soon as he decided he was done talking, he skulked out of the room because he doesn't want to be in there with those journalists because one of them is probably a carrier and they're in there just to get him. They're after him.
The paranoid schizophrenic bullshit that rolls around in his head. Well, and then I love the question about these people who are, you know,
he directly avoided the question, have you been tested? And he just galumphed on out of the room. And then I'm in plausible deniability. Mike Pencilneck Geek says, I don't know if he's been tested. Right. Are you kidding me? The president of the United States of America, the guy that the Secret Service is pledged to take a bullet for, and you're the presidential physician, and you know that you've been and you know that he's been shaking hands and smolicking all over dirty Republicans, and you're not going to run a test on that fucker. It's kind of like what Arnold said a little bit ago. He said you just listen to him, you can hear he's got it. But that just may be him. Being late for his two or three rails of Adderall.
That part too. But I love the question. Well, how could he? Well, you just reported one number, and the president reported this number. How could he be so wrong?
Well, he's not. He's always right. We don't have much of a handle on anything else, but I've got a handle on his dick.
Speaking of, okay, I've been
that's all any of that was for was to give him a cheap hand job.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that the only thing he can talk about is and that thing only happened because the stock market hemorrhaged today. They only show up if 2,000 people died. There would be no press conference, but the stock market shits itself. Man, they bring out they pull out all the stops.
Exactly. Yeah, you know, it's just, you know. But I've been trying to remember to say about this. So you know who I guess his name was, Chuck Lorre, the television producer and whatnot. So at the end of most of his shows, he has he puts these little typing sayings at the end of one of each of his shows. And the other day, when the whole a while back with the whole thing with Barr and I forget which the last scandal with Barr, and he said Bill B. Your head is so far up his ass that you can check for polyps.
Yeah, see him with the naked eye. Yep. I mean, he's so far gone, according to that same Gabriel Sherman article at Vanity Fair. He wants Bill Barr to prosecution to investigate the media for their coronavirus coverage.
Say what?
Yeah. See if you follow how Xi Jinping in China mishandled that country's response to it. Everything that Corona Caligula is doing is tracking parallel to what Xi Jinping did because he has such an abiding love for fascist dictators.
Oh,
and the Chinese people are furious with Xi Jinping. I think if they had half a chance, I think they'd probably string him up by his testicles and flay him alive. Because he made it so much worse by trying to hide it, by suppressing the doctors who were trying to alert others of the existence of the disease.
Nothing to see here. We're good. Keep moving. I don't know. So I am going out. My sister's still here because she came down to watch and cheer me up. You know, this is the first time, because typically, you know, when I do my 5Ks and all that, I do them by myself. No one comes with me, you know. So this is the first time that I've actually had people there cheering for me. Holy shit, what a difference that makes. Just when you're about to give up, when you hear somebody say, go Tracy, it's like, oh, okay, I got to keep going because there are people here watching me. But so anyway, we're going to go. Have you heard of the movie The Banker?
I don't think so.
It's with Samuel L. Jackson, Anthony Mackie, Mia Long, and hold on one quick second. Sorry about that. And it's about these two bankers who, back in the 1960s, or businessmen rather, knowing that, you know, black people could not get home loans and stuff like that, hire a white man to front for them so he can help people buy homes. Because, you know, We live in a country where, you know, everybody can have the American dream, except unless only if you're, you know, a white person. And at that time, a white man, because even white women couldn't really buy property on their own.
Well, you know, oddly enough, I was thinking about, you know, that horrible Robin Hood movie with Kevin Costner in it. The only redeeming part of which is Morgan Freeman.
That was the only redeeming part.
Well, I've been thinking about one particular line from that film. Every time I see Mike Pence, I hear Morgan Freeman's voice in my head. Pray louder, Christian. Your God can't hear you.
That part. So, yeah, it's two African-American entrepreneurs in the 1950s hire a white man to pose as the head of their company while they posed as a janitor and a chauffeur and ran the business.
True story or?
True story.
Wow.
And, you know, it's Samuel Jackson and Anthony Mackie. So, Nia Long and Cole Meany and a couple of other people I've never heard of. Oh, it's an Apple movie.
Oh.
I guess it's by Apple. Apple finally releases The Banker first. Okay. So these are movies, I guess, Apple Studios. Yeah. So we're going to go see that tonight, this evening. So, but anyway, you got
a note from Darlene in Connecticut. And cheering for you clear across the country, Tracy. I was thinking about you the whole day, searched online to see if there was any live stream of the event. So happy that, one, you didn't drown, and two, you are now a bona fide triathlete. Congratulations.
Well, tell Darlene, if I get her information, I will send her a picture. Or you can send it to her, the one that I sent you.
That happened. That already happened.
Oh, shit, I didn't put it on. Did I put that on? I put it on our Horn family.
Yeah, but I emailed it to her directly.
Okay, good. Okay, good. So, yeah, no, I'm still high from the experience. It still really hasn't sunk in yet that, you know, that I actually finished the triathlon. that I am now a bona fide official. I got bona fide. Bob, I got bona fide.
You're bona fide.
I'm bona fide. I can't. You know, and I this morning I went for a swim and it felt really good. But like I said, I really got to up my swimming game because I do want to do another triathlon. And to tell you the truth, for what I understand, 150 meters is not the typical sprint triathlon, which is, you know, is typically at the minimum using 300 meters. So I got to up my game.
Well, but, I know you're out there looking for another one.
Yeah, I am.
Lee in New York says, three cheers for Tracy. We are all in awe.
You know what? Every time I thought about giving up because, and I'm going to say this and then I'm going to go, but on the rules, it was you had to be done and be in the pool by 10:15 and out by 10:30. And so, like I said, I was the last person the last person on the road on the bike. And like I said, they were pulling up the cones behind me. So when I got into the transition area, I almost didn't go to the pool because I thought it would be closed. That, you know, they weren't going to, and I thought about it and I'm like, wait a minute. I'm going to still go and run to the pool, and if it's closed, it's closed. But at least I did it. At least I attempt. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, and look, you're Tracy. The only way they're going to keep you, the only way you're going to keep you out of a pool is going to involve a subsequent lawsuit.
Yeah, exactly. So, when I got to the pool. And it was just, you know, because I was, oh, Bob, I was dragging. My ass was dragging. It wasn't so much tired because my legs, I have really strong legs, but it was still the dread of getting into that water. You know, like I said, I still have an issue because I'm still not as strong a swimmer. So I still have the issue with the water. But when that woman told me that I can do the backstroke, I said, oh, bitch, it's on. I got this. The backstroke? Oh, no. We're good. So, you know, I will, you know, just to know that I can do it and that my, you know, I'm a 53-year-old woman who still weighs over 200 pounds. And I managed in a course of 2.5 hours to run 3 miles, right? Run a 5K, which is 3.1 miles, then ride my bike 9.5, damn near 10 miles when you include how far you have to, you know, with the transition, and, you know, and then, you know, run to where the pool is. So that's from transition to the pool is basically a quarter of a mile, and then get in the pool and swim 150 meters, which is basically, what's 54 times 3? 55 times 3. 165 or something like
yes.
that?
Yes.
What is it? So I swam 165 yards. All over the course of 2.5 hours for somebody who a year ago could not run, who just learned how to swim in January, really start swimming in October and didn't get my ass on my bike until, you know, January, February. So we can only go up from here.
I'm telling you, it's damned impressive.
So that's, you know, so anytime. So you saw what I put on my Facebook page. So I actually put it on my Facebook page. I said, today I'm going to grab Fear by the balls and squeeze until it sings soprano.
And you did.
And I did. I as you said, I own that shit. So on that note, we're going to do a Tracy $25 challenge in honor of almost. Wait, how many? So three plus 12 is three plus nine is 12 Clarence. Okay, yeah, Twin Tower Challenge. Close enough.
Okay.
Tracy did not drown. She finished the triathlon.
Okay. The Tracy didn't drown and finished the triathlon challenge is on the table to the tune of $25. And that would be huge because that would take us down to only $155 to finish the evening. So that's awesome, Tracy. Thank you. And again, congratulations so very much. Now all you got to do is find you another one because, you know, after you get the first one's free. Now you've dealt with all the fears and the misgivings and the self-doubt. And now you can just go and whip the shit out of another one.
Oh, and by the way, what the best part about the whole thing is when I got my bib number, it's bib number 53. How old am I? 53. So my bib number was my age. And at that point, I knew.
That was an omen.
It was an omen. It was an omen. So on that note, I am out. I love you all.
Enjoy the movie.
Hopefully... Yes, I will, and I'll give you guys a review the next time I give a call.
All right, you take care, Tracy. Have a wonderful evening. You triathlete.
Bye.
Bye now. Oh, I love hearing her laugh, and we are all so proud of Tracy. She just absolutely kicked ass. And what a profile and determination, and what a magnificent exhibition of refusing to be limited by one's fears, by one's misgivings, by ideas of what one can and cannot do. I can't say enough. I cannot say enough. That's the program. We'll get back into it tomorrow with Titanic Tuesday. I hope you're looking forward to it as much as I am. I've got an early day tomorrow. Check engine light came on. And so it's time to take the new used car that just crossed over 40,000 miles and make them turn it off. Don't know why it came on, but it came on. So that's at like 8 o'clock in the morning. Eesh. But I'll be back, and I'll be on the air tomorrow evening. And hopefully you'll all be here as well. And remember, for the overnight crew or anybody listening now, Tracy put a $25 challenge on the table, the Tracy Didn't Drown Challenge. Not drowning is really the key to one of the big keys to successfully completing a triathlon. And hopefully that'll be met by tomorrow, and that'll mean our fundraising goal will be like $355. So thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air, each and every one of you, Patreon subscribers, PayPal subscribers, a la carte contributors, those of you who do some of one and another, and some all three, thank you. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program, in almost any manner you may so choose. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Steve and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, headon.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, whiterosesociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.